100% religious before coming to Israel. How spiritually depleted it has become, with increasing number of its members fostering drugs, prostitution, and murder. Consider its intellectual elite vehemently anti-religious. However, Rabbi Lapiansky continues, yet, how can we ignore the overwhelming hashkacha, providence, and nisim, miracles, that God has bestowed upon us? The ability for the vulnerable sheep to exist among 70 vicious wolves. Lapiansky says, there's two things happening simultaneously, in his view. On the one hand, this is a catastrophe. People are going to Israel and throwing away religion. They're throwing it away. They're becoming less observant. How can that be the beginning of redemption? At the same time, this is a miracle. A nation returning to its homeland after hundreds of years, even thousands of years, after persecution, after the Holocaust. How can you deny that? You can't deny either. So number one, we don't know what this is. Number two, he says, it doesn't matter. I think this is really provocative. He says, thus our guideline for action is the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law. Neither the term Ma'aseh Satan nor Ischalta de Geula is meaningful in a halachic sense. Under those circumstances wherein the din requires us to immigrate to Eretz Israel, we must do so. Even if the Satan, the devil, is the prime minister and the cabinet members are demons, it doesn't matter who's in charge of the government. If God says, go to Israel, you go. And conversely, even if the prime minister would wear a shtreimel and all the Knesset members would study Daf Yomi together, if the law determines that an individual should not go to Eretz Yisrael, such as when there is a spiritual advantage to remaining in Chutz Laretz and diaspora, he should not go. Argument two, even if this is the beginning of the redemption, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference. He says, we do what the law says. And third, and this is another piece from the same book, I have it here. And I want to say, by the way, don't look at Rav Aaron Lapiansky as just an anti-Zionist. He has loads of really wonderful, awesome ideas. He has great things to say about Jewish thought and philosophy. I'm just focusing on one aspect here. But he, in the following paragraph, he argues, he tries to explain why it is that in more yeshivish circles, Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Israel's Independence Day, is not celebrated. And he says as follows. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a prominent rabbi at the time of the destruction of the temple, was even willing to surrender the capital city of Jerusalem to spare Jewish lives once he was assured of the continuity of the Torah in Yavne, with no fatal loss to Jewish nationhood. Torah guarantees Israel's integrity. The conventional trappings of nationhood do not. Pursuing this line of thought, one would not question, for those who just entered, I'm going to share my sources again. Excuse me. Pursuing this line of thought, one would not question why 5 ER, Israel's Independence Day, passed unmarked and Agudas Yisrael and most yeshiva circles. And here's the key line, and I want to hear what you think about this. Here's the key line in bold. For the state of Israel is neither sacred nor profane. Again, I don't agree with this, but this is what he is saying, but rather mundane. It's just mundane. Just as a person is enjoined to make a normal and reasonable effort to secure a job, a house, clothing, etc., so too should the Medina defend itself against enemies, promote industry and commerce, retain reasonable relations with other groups or nations, and generally secure its communal national interests. Furthermore, by virtue of its mundane status, the state can become sanctified when used as a means for furthering Jewish spiritual welfare. On the other hand, it can become degraded when used as a hindrance to it or even in opposition to it, chas v'shalom. However, statehood is never an end or a goal in itself. It is only a means for further accomplishment. So I want to now summarize what Rav Lapiansky has argued here, and I want to know why, if you do, maybe you agree, why you would disagree. I think there are three points. Point number one, we don't know. We don't know what is going to happen with the state of Israel, meaning when every week in Shul, or at least in Shara Shemayim, we say, Reshit Smicha Geulatenu, that the state of Israel is the beginning of the flowering of the redemption, Rabbi Lipiansky responds, it may very well be, it may very well not be, we don't know. Number two, his argument is, even if that is so, that is not something that translates into halachic terminology. Whether it is the beginning of redemption or not, isn't particularly noteworthy. What I want to know is what halacha says. What does Jewish law say? That's number two. Number three, his point is, the notion of statehood, establishing a government, establishing an economy, having an army, all that is important and necessary. It's mundane. It is not sacred. It is not holy. It is not something that belongs in a discussion in a study hall. It is simply what you need to do to go about your daily business, but that is not a religious notion. And so frankly, what I think he's asking is, what is religious about Zionism? And now I like to consider, and I think I will tell you that religious Zionism, I think, disagrees with all three of these arguments. And I'd like to show you how, but first I'd like to hear what you think. Why might you disagree with any of these three points? What do you think? Let's go with number one. Rabbi Lipiansky says, we don't know. Is it the beginning of our redemption? Or is it not the beginning of our redemption? I don't know. We just don't know. How might you respond to an argument like that? Thoughts? How might you respond to this notion that we just don't know? I mean, we do say it every day, every week in Shul, Reshit Smicha Gulatenu.
Isn't it the same question about the existence of God? We don't know. And so because we don't know, we believe that.
Okay, so it's turned faith. That's a fair point. Robin says, there are many things we don't know. Now I would even take that a step further, right? So it could be we can't definitively prove the existence of God. And I'm not going to argue that we can, but I don't think necessarily we go about life, you know, think in complete doubt. We sort of have, as you described, Robin, this faith, and it's an operating assumption. And I think I would even make the argument that while we can't prove it, but we can be confident or at least optimistic. Meaning, the first argument I want to show is that I think this is not all strains of Zionism. And by the way, I think the reason this is an important discussion is whether how you respond to these three points is going to shape what you think being a religious Zionist means. And I think there is a strain in religious Zionism that says, no, we don't know, but we can be pretty confident that indeed this is the beginning of redemption. We have reasons to think it is. We can't ignore and just say, I don't know, maybe not, I don't know. No. Can I prove it to you? Of course I can't prove it to you, but I can be confident. I have signs. I have reasons to think it is. That's one argument. What about the second argument? Second argument is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether or not the state of Israel is the beginning of the redemption, because the only thing that triggers a religious response is what it says in the code of Jewish law. That is what we respond to. That is how we go about acting. We want to know if we should do or not do something. We ask the code of Jewish law. How might you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that most people have that in their mind when they go. I don't. Israel has the largest Jewish concentration of people in the world, greater even than America. And it's moving more and more into a majority. But people are going because that's where Jewish life is. That's where the future of Jewish life is.
Right.
We're making whatever we're going to become in Israel, not here in North America for sure.
Right.
There's too many conflicts.
It's just the future of the Jewish people. You're saying it's not that it says in Shulchan Aruch, it says in the code of Jewish law that you should make Aliyah. It's that you have this sense that this is where our trajectory is going. Yes, Paul, do you want to add something?
Well, I was just going to say, though, that we need the protection of the secular government and those things that you mentioned, the army, the air force, the planes. Right. We need that to protect the Jewish 100%. Identity in Israel. I mean, we can't ignore that anymore. We have neighbors all around us who are out to destroy us. We have people 100%. Who live in Israel who 100%. Are there to destroy us. So whether or not the redemption has started, the fact is that we need everybody else there to protect us so that we can get to that stage.
Right, 100%. I want to clarify, but Leonsky agrees. You need an army, you need a government, you need an economy, you need all that stuff. He's just saying that's not a holy endeavor. So let me.
No, but you need that to protect the holy endeavor.
Okay, that's fair.
It's exactly that most people in Israel have chosen, that they are going to protect the country and give the service necessary to keep 100%. It safe.
Well, so let me rephrase. I think it's something that Ralph was saying. Let me make 2 points. Number two, and I think this is really important. I think the Zionist religious consciousness does indeed expand beyond simply what it says in Jewish law. That, yes, we follow halacha, we have to follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, but we also have to be in tune with the voices of history. We also have to be cognizant of what has happened to our people over thousands of years. And this is, and you can't just say, well, you know what? This is an amazing miracle that God just performed. But it doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't say in the code of Jewish law that when God performs a miracle that you're supposed to do something about it. It doesn't say that. So maybe we shouldn't. Of course. Well, of course. And let me add, aren't we also responsive? Although maybe not in the same formal way. Aren't we responsive to what it says in the Torah or in the Navi? And when we see prophecies being realized before our eyes, isn't that also a reason to respond? And if I'm in touch with the Jewish pulse, isn't that also a reason to respond beyond simply what it says in the code of Jewish law? And I think related to this, the third point, I'm going to show all of this to you, is that that's not so. It's not so that it's mundane. Religious Zionism believes, or many strains of it at least believe, that the government and the army and the economy, all that is indeed a holy endeavor. It is not mundane. It is a mitzvah. It is a religious obligation to establish a government. It is now a mitzvah to farm the land. It is a mitzvah to build society. That is not profane, certainly not profane, and not even mundane. So let's briefly, and we only have a few minutes left, and I don't want to focus mostly on what we disagree with or what I disagree with, but what I do agree with. Let us begin briefly, and I'd love to hear, I unfortunately have 15 minutes left. I'd love to hear questions and comments. Please do, if you have a minute, put your email address in the chat so that I can email you and you can email me, and this can be an ongoing conversation. Let me begin with point one. Why would we be confident this is Reshit Smicha Geulatenu? So if you look in source number four, an excerpt from actually a book I have over here somewhere by Rabbi Dr. Avram Steinberg. Can't find it right now. Oh, here it is. It's called Prayers for the Welfare of the State. And he, in it, the book, he argues for why it's important to recite the Tefillah Shlomo Medina. And in the beginning of the book, he sort of goes through this dispute as to whether or not Eretz Yisrael is really Reshit Smicha Geulatenu. And here he makes a number of points indicating that it is, or there's reason to believe it is. There are those who say, in source number four, and I will post just one more time, post the source sheet in the chat, and I hope the link at least, I hope it's accessible. There are those who say that the events linked to the establishment of the State of Israel are fully in keeping with the definition of the first flowering of redemption. This view regards a sequence of events which occurred in the last two centuries as signals by God which herald the coming of our final and incomplete redemption. And it gives you examples. Number one, the historical era is keeping in with the redemption. If you look in source number five, I brought you a source in the Talmud, the Gemara, where the Gemara says that the world's history is divided into three sort of sections, 6,000 years of world history. The first 2,000 are 2,000 years of tohu, craziness, desolation. The next 2,000 years are 2,000 years of Torah, And the final 2,000 years are the years of the Messiah. Now, obviously, counting by the rabbinic count, this is year 5781, such that we're really at the very end. We're at the finish line. If the Gemara says that near year 6,000, the redemption begins, we are in the right time period. Number two, negative events, meaning negative events, bad things that happen to the Jewish people are a harbinger, a sign of the redemption. The birth pangs of the Messiah, we say, Chavlei Mashiach. You look in source number six. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Im ra'ita dor shem mitma'ed v'holei chakelo. If you see a generation whose wisdom and Torah study is steadily diminishing, await the coming of the Messiah, thinking about what's happened over the centuries, assimilation, and all that brings with it. Shenamar, and he quotes a pasuk. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. If you see a generation whose troubles inundate it like a river, then wait for the Messiah. Has there been a generation which went through trouble that inundated it like a river, such as the generation that went through World War II? And instead of saying World War II, then the World War II becomes a harbinger, believe it or not, as crazy as it sounds, of the redemption. And so you see that negative signs, our negative events are a sign of the redemption. And three, positive events, signs of the end of the exile and signs are harbingers of complete redemption, which should come speedily in our days. Look at, and for this, and there are many examples of this, but I love the example from source number seven in the Ramban. The Ramban here is commenting on a verse in the Torah which describes the tochacha, punishments that God says he will meet upon the Jewish people if they sin. But there's a really interesting line within that set of punishments. It says, "V'shamamu aleha oyevechem." Your enemies will be desolate upon it. And the Ramban says, what does it mean your enemies will be desolate upon it? He says as follows in source number seven. I'll read it in English for time's sake. And also when it says, your enemy shall be desolate upon it, it signifies good news, which should spread throughout the exile. Our land will not accept our enemies. This is a great food from promise to us, for you will not find in all civilization a land which is good and extensive and was always settled, but is now in ruins, like the land of Israel. Says the Ramban 700 plus years ago, Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, is a wonderful land, fruitful, lots of crops, and you look at it now, it's desolate. It's desolate. And because that's what the Torah says, that unless the nation of Israel is inhabiting Eretz Israel, it will not bloom. The crops will not grow. And he says, I went to Israel and it's desolate. And Mark Twain said in the 1800s, this land has nothing. It's a wasteland. And look at what has happened. Look at what has happened. Now the Jewish people have come back. Things are growing again. This is agriculture. Things are blooming. That doesn't mean it's perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect. So these are all, in a sense, harbingers, signposts that maybe indeed this is Aschal de Gula. Maybe it's not just, I don't know, maybe not. No, maybe we can be confident about that. And I will quote you from the Rambam, because you might say to me, well, those are all signs, but, you know, a lot of bad things have happened. You still can't know. And I agree. I agree that you can't know. But shouldn't we be optimistic? If you look in source number eight, the Rambam here writes, Maimonides himself writes about the requirements to believe in the coming of a Messiah, but it's not enough to believe that there will be a Messiah that will come one day. He says something else. Kol Mish Eino Ma'amin Bo, look in the second line of source number eight. Anyone who doesn't believe in him, O Mish Eino Mechakeh Lebiviviato, or one who does not anticipate his coming. Lo b'shar neviim b'levadu kofel b'torah Moshe Rabbeinu. Not only is he denying the prophecies of the Messiah, but he's denying the prophecy of Moshe. The point is, it's not sufficient to say, I believe one day Mashiach will come. You need to anticipate it. To me, anticipating means being attuned to the voice of history, being attuned to what is happening around us, considering, well, maybe this is indeed in line with the prophecies that have been promised to us. So that's number one. number one argument I would make is I do think that we can be more confident than just saying, I don't know, maybe it's Reshit's Michal Gulotenu, maybe not, who knows? No, we can be more confident than that. But number two, I think, is more fundamental. Number two, again, the response to the fact that, well, look, it doesn't matter whether it is. I don't think that's true. And religious Zionist thought says that's the opposite of true. It does matter because we need to do something about it. A fundamental notion of religious Zionism is that the Ge'ulah, the redemption, ain't just going to fall down from heaven if you sit back in your seats and hope for it to happen. Redemption comes when we do something about it, when we make it come. And this is the kernel, the most important idea of the thought of Zvi Hirsch Kalischer. I mean, Zvi Hirsch Kalischer was one of the first religious Zionist thinkers in 19th century Germany, a prominent rabbi who learned with the great Torah scholars of his time, such as Rabbi Akiva Eger, if you've heard of him, big Torah scholar who was a religious Zionist. And here's what he said, and I'll read in English, my translation. The redemption of Israel that we are desperately waiting for. Do not think that suddenly Hashem will descend from the heavens to the land to say to his people, come out, or send his Messiah from heaven to blow a great shofar on the rejected of Israel and gather them to Jerusalem and make for the wall of fire, that the temple of God will descend from on high as promised by his servants the prophets. Not so, the educated reader. Surely all the predictions of the prophets will be fulfilled in the last days. And God forbid, nothing will fall to the ground. But not in flight will we go, not in a hurry in one day. Rather, bit by bit, the redemption of Israel will come slowly, slowly. The pride of salvation will sprout until Israel takes up force and achieves its end in fulfilling all the predictions and promises from the scriptures and the words of our late rabbis. And also, logic dictates this. Meaning, number one, just because it doesn't all happen right away, you don't see a temple right now in Jerusalem, doesn't mean that it's not on its way. It's going to be a slow development, and we need to do something about it. And I think this is an important strain within religious Zionism thought. It's activism. He argues in this book for donating to Eretz Israel, giving precedence to the people, the cities in Israel in terms of our donations. He makes arguments for actually, in a very radical way, bringing back sacrifice, bringing back the temple. And it's not a political consideration, it's a halachic consideration of whether or not we can bring sacrifices nowadays. But practical steps, doing something about it. And that is another important strain of Jewish thought. And I think maybe the most prominent spokesperson of this notion is, again, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik in his work, Kol Dodi Dofeik. A quote from Shir HaShirin, "Listen, my beloved Knox." Soloveitchik contemplates upon the significance of what has happened in his day and the significance of the fact that we suffered so much and now God has given us this. And he talks about six different reasons why this is a knock on our doorstep to spring into action. Six different reasons he gives. The religious notion of it, the fact that other religions said the Jews are going to be in exile forever and we return, the inspiration it gave to people who were so ashamed of being Jewish. And he goes on and on. The fact that now we can say Jewish blood is not cheap. All of these are reasons to be inspired. And he says as follows. If God's grace, which is given in 11, source number 11, which is given to either an individual or a community, requires certain actions of the beneficiary, even if the gifts which are granted to man by natural means, how much more so is it true that divine gifts given supernaturally in the form of miracles that transcend the framework of the elementary laws of historical causality must subject the recipient of the miracles to God. We are the recipients of miracles. You can't be the recipient of a miracle and do nothing about it. That's against the notion of religion. You can't sit there and say, look, it's a miracle, but I don't know. Who knows? That's not in fulfillment of halacha, says Soloveitchik. A transcendental imperative always accompanies miraculous activity. Command the children of Israel, woe unto the beneficiary of a miracle who does not recognize it for what it is, and whose ear is deaf to the echo of the imperative that arises out of this meta-historical event. pity the one who benefits from the miracle of the master of the universe. The spark of faith is not kindled in him, and his conscience is not stirred, but it's by the singular event. It's not enough to say there's nothing to do about it. No, we need to do something about it. We need to respond. We need to be grateful. We need to be receptive to the time that we live in. So that's the second argument against this notion of what doesn't really matter whether it's the beginning of the fire of redemption. And finally, and there's so much to say about this, and I think we'll talk about this more in detail as we move on in this series, but there's a last notion. The notion that Rabbi Lopayanti argues it's mundane. And religious Zionism, in different ways, responds to that by saying it is absolutely not mundane. Establishing the state of Israel in its physical capacity as a political entity is a religious activity. But there's different ways to say that. There are different ways to formulate that argument. And it's worth considering each of them. Number one, I think maybe this is the most practical, because Rabbi Soloveitchik, unlike other religious Zionist thinkers, does not think about this in a metaphysical, spiritual, messianic way. He thinks of it in a practical way. But there's a notion of Jewish pride. The notion of being proud to be Jewish, being proud of our country, being proud of what we had. Right, Dr. Judah Goldberg, a common thinker nowadays, a prominent thinker, points out that if you look in the Torah celebrates the fact that Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were successful, that they were political entities, that they talked to kings, that they were wealthy, that they had wonderful lives. The reason for that is because part of our identity as Jews is identifying with nationhood. And if you identify with the Jewish nation, then you can be proud of our accomplishments in Israel. And you could be proud, as Adir mentioned to me when we were talking just last night, of the fact that Israel is so ahead of the game in terms of its response to coronavirus and vaccinating people, that we can be proud of that. And Rabbi Soloveitchik says in source number 12, Providence demands from us now, perhaps the first time in Jewish history, to meet the outside world with pride and courage, with the kippah on the head and the tractate Yibamot, the tractate of Gemara, in the hand, and to sanctify it by conquest. Wherever we place our feet, in the laboratory, the business office, the university campus, or in the factory, must be sanctified. That the young man who enters these subdue them and does not allow the secular to swallow up the holy. We can be proud of everything in our lives now. We can be proud to be Jewish because everything is included in this endeavor to create this nation state. So that's one argument. Even if you say, you're right, like Paul said, the army is important for all of these things because it protects the holy endeavor. But that gives us a reason for pride. National pride is not something to scoff at. Look at the Nevi'im. Look at the prophecies. They're all about national pride. You're going to come back. People are going to wonder at how wonderful the nation of Israel is. That is a spiritual motive. Maybe on a more halachic level, source number 13, without going into it in depth, we have a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, settling the land of Israel. Whether it's one of the 613 or not, halacha recognizes the mandate to settle the land of Israel. And Rabbi Eliezer Melamed, a prominent religious Zionist posek nowadays, argues that part of settling the land of Israel is establishing a government, establishing a state. That is part of the mandate. You can't just go there, conquer it, and leave. You can't just go there, conquer it, and abandon it. That part of their obligation is to settle completely the land of Israel. And this will have hashkafic import in terms of considering things like land for peace, or, you know, how important is it to conquer greater Israel? If your philosophy is that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael means conquering every single last inch in Israel and living there and governing that land, well, that will be a pretty important argument to consider in that context. But finally, and you know, you can't talk about an intro to religious Zionism without talking about Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the prominent, amazing, incredible tzaddik and rav from the end of the 20th and the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century in Eretz Israel. Rabbi Cook argues in a more fundamental way that the notion of having a nation in Eretz Israel is the ability to express all of the different kohora nefesh, all the different expressions of the soul in every single aspect of life. To take that desire to connect to God, to really live, to really be free, and express in every single thing that we do. It's the place where everything becomes part of our religious experience. Everything, no matter what you're doing, whether it's in the marketplace or in the study hall. I'll just read the first few lines, and we're running out of time. Says Rav Kook, and this is in Orot, which begins with this treatment of the land of Israel. Betoch halev panima, I just have to read it in Hebrew because you can't just read Rav Kook in English. It's just doesn't do it justice. Inside the heart, bechedrei tarakto kedushato, in the depths, in the rooms of purity and holiness, mitgaberet yashel hevet hayisraeli, the Jewish flame increases. Hadoreshet bechazaka, which demands with strength. Which strongly demands the courageous and frequent attachment of life to the commandments of God. That every aspect of my life, everything that I do, should be commanded, should be connected to the commandments of God, to mitzvot. But second, Ruach Hashem, to pour the Spirit of God. Ruach Yisrael ha-malei ha-klali, ha-malei kol chalala san ha-shaman. Again, he says, call, all. The Jewish spirit that fills the entirety of the space of the soul. The soul has many different implements. And the Jewish spirit fills all of it. To fully express the Jewish expression with complete prominence. Ma'asit in a practical way, the idealit, and in an idealistic way. And you can read more, and he has this notion again and again and again, this thought. But his point is, and this is also something which makes us think differently about what diaspora is. But Cook says, if you want to live a full Jewish life and to think, fully express the Jewish spirit, the place to do that is in the land of Israel with a functioning Jewish nation in the land, such that everything, every expression of the soul, the farming, the agriculture, the infrastructure, all of that is connected to mitzvot. And so I think we can respond to all of the arguments of Aaron Lipiansky. And I hope that these thoughts, these ideas are percolating in our minds as we continue to explore these important topics of what it means to be a religious Zionist today together. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, I have to run out of mincha, but if you have any questions, please do email me. I'll put my email in the chat right now, and I'm looking forward to getting together and learning again together in the near future, although next week again we will not be able to have this class. Have a wonderful night and a wonderful week, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi.